Welcome to Mind Your Biz Today on South Florida's only all-business radio station, 880 AM. Today's business world is fast-paced and ever-changing. Gain a competitive advantage by listening to Mind Your Biz Today, hosted by Janie Smith, CEO of Smart Advantage. Janie is a best-selling author and business consultant extraordinaire with over 35,000 hours consulting C-suite executives. She will help you navigate today's business hurdles and maximize your opportunities with thought-provoking discussions with CEOs, business authors, and thought leaders. Learn the latest trends and profit-producing ideas for growing your business.
Brought to you by the Hudson Institute of Executive Education at Nova Southeastern University. Executive training programs to excel in today's competitive market.
Here's your host, Janie Smith.
South Florida, welcome back to Mind Your Biz Today. We have a very interesting show today with Stephen Clement. I will introduce him in a little while. First, I want to thank our sponsor, the Hudson Institute of Executive Education at Nova Southeastern University. We'll be talking more about them in the coming weeks. Also, I want to remind our listeners, please go to our website, mindyourbiztoday.com, and give us your thoughts and recommendations for shows, specific business, business topics that you would love to see and hear on our show, because we will gather the experts. We have access to some of the finest experts in the world on most of the business topics, and we have one with us today. So I want to talk a little bit, talk about the topic of today, and then we'll bring Stephen Clement into the conversation. Stephen is a master at organizational dynamics and organization leadership. And I want to tell you just a funny story about this. I have been most of you know, have been listening to this show. I've been coaching CEOs for many, many years, and I get to witness a lot of leadership issues. And as a result, over the years, I've heard speakers talk about this wonderful consultant, Elliot Jacques, who studied human behavior in organizations for 40 or 50 years. Well, I've always been a fan of his work, and I talked about it periodically with the people I was coaching. Well, one day, I was very fortunate. I was on an airplane, and I was sitting next to this gentleman who, you know, in an airplane conversation, I said, "What kind of work do you do?" And he said, organizational design. And I said, "Gee, have you heard of Elliot Jacques?" And it was kind of funny because he said, "Sure, I wrote the book with him." So that's our guest today, and that's how I met our guest, because I was just thrilled to listen to the wonderful stories that he brought to the work of Elliot and what he's been doing ever since then relative to organizational design and how important it is in leadership. So I want to tell you a little bit about Stephen, besides the fact that I met him on an airplane. He is a graduate of West Point and a Master of Science in Industrial Relations from Purdue, and a Doctor of Philosophy of Organizational Communications also in Purdue. And one of the things I found most fascinating is Dr. Clement has recently completed a total redesign and restructuring of a number of key headquarters for the Department of the Army and major Army subordinate commands. And this has been a multi-year initiative. So I got to thinking about this. If you can redesign and help the Army get organized, an organization that large, imagine the applications in everyday business and what he's learned about what goes right and what goes wrong, and how to better design an organization to be much more productive. So I want to welcome Dr. Clement. Dr. Clement, are you on the line?
Yes, I am. Glad to be here.
Well, thank you for being with us today. And, I just don't know where to start because your work is so interesting. So why don't we start with you telling us a little more about your background than I just have talked about, and how you got so interested in the field of organizational design.
Okay. Well, when I was, I taught leadership in the leadership department at West Point after I graduated, went out and did a traditional Army career, went back to graduate school. And my approach there was the normal traditional behavioral approach to leadership. It was interpersonally based. We looked at things like communication skills, counseling skills, human relations, planning, decision-making, et cetera. And it was more focused on the individual and the individual interacting with a small group of people in terms of the leadership approach. About 15 years after I started to do that, I ran into Dr. Jacks, who was doing a study of the Army because he was interested in why the Army had its combat structure the way it did, and it had the same structure since Roman Legion days. And what I learned in that ensuing number of years working with Dr. Jacks was that if you marry traditional leadership behavior with organizational theory, you get an interesting byproduct, because organizational structure, if it's not designed correctly, can often mitigate or override all of the leadership development.
Well, can you give me an example of when it's organized poorly and when it's organized well? I mean, what are some of the key factors of organized well versus not so well?
Well, I look for having the proper number of layers. Most organizations have way too many layers from the bottom to the top. And so there's a whole series of data that would suggest how many layers you have. And then organizations also have roles crowded together historically inside of a layer. So one person is doing the same work as the other person and not adding value. So one of the issues is to get clarity around the work and the accountabilities and authorities inside the structure. Structure is important because it sets the context for how humans interact with each other. And so, if it's poorly structured or you've got too many people, it feels like someone's breathing down your throat, or it feels like someone is not adding any value to your work. And I know that none of your listeners ever experienced a problem who are just straw bosses.
The application of what you saw in the Army is what we see in businesses all the time, and it makes for very inefficient and unproductive organizations. And it also makes for an unhappy workforce. People don't want to be in that kind of environment. They want to know what their job is, and they want to be left alone to do it.
Yes. And in fact, if you want your people to work to their full individual creativity, then one of the expectations they have is that you have a proper structure, clear tasks, competent management above them, so they can get on with their work. And so one of the issues I find that has to do with design is that if you get the bottom part of the organization designed correctly, it's important because that's where all the people are. And that's probably where you'll make your money, because that's where you design and deliver your products and services. Most of the problems I see in organizations occur at the middle and top. And so in my work, for example, in the Army, I'm looking at a large organization with lots of people at the higher levels. And the question is, how do you get them to focus on the right work? And the right work is not necessarily telling or supervising people who are doing the operating execution. They're perfectly capable of doing their job.
So what happens when you again, take that application of the layers into a small, medium-sized business where you don't have as many people, certainly as in the Army or as many departments, but you have a microcosm of it, and yet the same problems still persist. So how would you recommend to our listeners who may be in small, medium-sized businesses, and some of them in large corporations who have a bureaucratic organizational design, which sounds like a lot like what you're describing, what would you recommend for managers in those organizations to be on the lookout for?
What I find in smaller, medium-sized businesses is that the senior-level people have to do multiple tasks. Unfortunately, what they tend to do is they tend to hang on to the work that they had been doing at the lower levels and not doing the longer, more complex work that needs to be done at the higher levels.
Oh, gosh. I got to tell you, I see that with CEOs. The entrepreneurial companies, the CEO hangs on to that which he or she likes doing. So I was good at sales or I was good at operations, I'm going to keep doing it even though it's not a productive or good use of my time. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, absolutely. And the concepts that I use would look at a small business. You ought to be able to run it with four or five levels from the worker to the CEO. And the issue is what you find is the last fun job is at the lower levels where you give an order and they actually execute it. As you get higher in the organization, the work changes to be more anonymity sets in. You don't have all the face-to-face contact, and so people want to hang on to what they used to do, but that's not what the company needs.
Yeah, so that goes back to the Michael, I believe it was Michael Gerber in the E-Myth. He says, you know, the senior management really has to focus on working on the business, not in the business. Yet many entrepreneur owners will gravitate to working in the business because it's more fun, and they like the face-to-face, or they miss it when they get up into the strategic level. And I think what I hear you're saying is leadership needs to be much more focused in the strategic arena.
Yes. In fact, that's where the world of uncertainty comes in. And it's developing a series of being able to develop a series of options so the business can continue to expand or grow and serve its customer base. That's a different kind of work than delivering today's products and services. You have to do both, but it's more fun to do the one and less fun to do the other one. And so people tend to hang on to what they are comfortable, have been comfortable doing.
Yeah, and so just one last question, and then we got to take a commercial break pretty soon. But I just wanted to ask you some of the time I have over my years of experience with companies, people will say, come in and fix my people. And I usually say, well, let's fix you first, because while you say you fix it at the bottom, but the leverage starts at the top. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. In fact, I would argue that if you really need to start at the top and work down. And my experience is that people at the bottom of the organizations generally are pretty capable of doing the job if left alone and given the right tools. And what you have to do is get people, it's not about fixing people, it's about letting people work to their full capacity. And everybody will have different skills and different strengths and weaknesses, and it's maximizing that and not trying to make them somebody who they aren't.
Yeah, I always see that. You see businesses trying to put square pegs in round holes, and then the management gets so frustrated because they're not working out. Well, you hired wrong. You know, so own it. And we see that a lot. And if that person, you know, let that person go and onto something where they can be who they were meant to be. Don't try to make them who they're not. And I mean, just those simple observations in companies are very complex when you talk about organizational design in terms of how easily you can fix it with a little knowledge about what your organizational design should be and how to set parameters around it. Stephen, we're going to take a break in about a minute here, so I'll be back with a couple more questions. I think this work you do is absolutely fascinating, and as I said, I've been a fan of it for years. So, again, I want to just tell our listeners, remind them to please go to mindyourbiz.com and give us your request for show ideas in the coming weeks. We will provide experts on any topic, and also smartadvantage.com is our website for creating competitive advantage, which is what we help companies do. Stephen, I have 30 seconds. What's your website?
My website is organizational.com.
Okay.
www.organizational.com.
And okay.
Do the same thing. Help companies get their structure right so they can get the most out of their people.
All right. Well, that's great. We're going to take a short break here, and we'll be back with some more questions for Dr. Clement. Thank you so much. Again, thank you, Hudson Institute, for being our sponsor.
We'll be right back with Mind Your Biz Today and Janie Smith after this word from our sponsors.
Searching for executive training programs to help your company's growth? 90% of South Florida's major corporations have sent their executives to training at Nova Southeastern University's Hudson Institute of Executive Education. With workshops ranging from sales to Six Sigma and from management development to mergers and acquisitions, your executives will gain the skills necessary to immediately impact your bottom line. To customize your organization's training, visit nova.edu/business.
Here is Janie Smith with Mind Your Biz Today.
Florida to Mind Your Biz Today. We're going to continue our discussion with Dr. Clement, who is an expert in organizational design. He started his career in West Point and has written a number of books, one of which was written with Elliot Jacques, who wrote the book. I always forget this title. It's so long. Executive Leadership, A Practical Guide to Managing Complexity. We all forget how complex working with people, period, is complex, and much less trying to put a bunch of them together to oversimplify organizational design. It's a complex thing. And if we have some tools, like Dr. Clement is going to share with us, it makes our jobs a lot easier. So, Dr. Clement, you want to share with us, you talked about the importance of applying organizational design principles in order to get the most out of people. Can you describe these principles for us?
Sure. They're relatively straightforward. For example, you organize around the work, not around personalities or difficult issues. You start off with what's the work that we have to do to serve our customer. Focus on the customer in terms of what does the customer want or need, and how can you serve the customer. Concentrate on your core business, not on esoteric things that get in the way.
Oh, boy, I could use that advice. Keep going.
Make sure that you have clear accountabilities and authorities. I don't use the term responsibility because I differentiate in organizations, the manager holds a subordinate accountable to get work done on behalf of the company. And so it's an accountable hierarchy. So I use the term accountabilities, but get clear on what you want people to do. What is the work that they're supposed to do? One of the things, as an aside, I do find is that quite often what people are doing is not necessarily what they ought to be doing at a given level in the organization. And so you provide some tools about what would a person be doing at this level in a small company? What should they be doing versus what are they doing? Again, the problems begin to creep in when you get above the bottom of the organization. Another principle is make sure you have the right number of layers. Now, most of your organizations won't need 7 levels from the worker to the top, but an institution like the Army, you should be able to run it from the soldier to the 4-star general with 7 levels.
And so what would you say for a small, medium-sized business, the kind that really makes up most of America? 80% of the GDP is small, medium-sized businesses. So what kind of level should, say, $60 to $100 million company have in your mind?
It would probably be in the area of 4 to 5 levels, from the CEO down to the worker.
All right, and then a $10 to $20 million company?
That might be 3 and 4.
Okay, because it's a growth thing. As we grow in revenue and number of customers and productivity, we need to add levels.
And what happens quite often is that instead of splitting horizontally, companies add vertical layers, and that's how they get too many layers. And then the perception is that I'm not adding any real value because I'm doing the same work as the person below me.
Okay.
You sort through that and get rid of that overlap and dysfunction.
Okay.
Another one is to get clarity on working relationships. What authority do you need if you have to work with someone outside of your particular area, and what's the accountability to go with it? Yeah, I'll give you kind of a humorous example. In the government, they want the authority, but they don't want the accountability. And accountability and authority are opposite sides of the same coin. You can't have one without the other.
That's not exclusive to the Army. I see that everywhere, but I understand what you're saying, Dr. Clement.
Well, and so what you have is you can't have accountability for oversight without having the authority of oversight without having the commensurate accountability to do due diligence action. And so one of the things I'm finding is interesting is I'm doing a little case study on the blowout of the well in the Gulf of Mexico in terms of what's the nature of the relationship between the three parties. And because there's lots of money involved now, people are getting interested. But companies typically don't define the nature of these diagonal relationships. And so as a result, they wait for difficult personalities to come in and take whatever authority they can get away with. And that creates all kinds of problems.
So are you saying he who screams the loudest sort of takes the authority, whether they are the right person for it or not, and that's how things go sideways?
Yes, and you get unnecessary, I call that conflict that just consumes the creative energy of people working through the problem. And the problem is not difficult personalities. The problem is lack of clarity about what am I accountable to do, who do I have to work with to get it done, and what authority do I need in that diagonal relationship to get this done.
Boy, I bet there was a lot of that. I'd be real interested when you get finished with that study with the oil spill, because with all the finger pointing, you can see where your work certainly has application, not just between different organizations that are responsible, but within each of them. And I guess that's what you're dissecting. Is that right?
Yes, I am, in terms of that. And mm-hmm. another point that you might find interesting, the listeners might find interesting, I don't, there's always a big argument between leadership and management. And so you'll hear companies say, we need more leadership around here and less management. Part of the problem comes from social science community not defining terms correctly. I define leadership as getting your team to follow with you in a common direction, exercising their full creativity. I also define management as getting your team to follow with you, exercising their full creativity and innovation. So what I'm really saying is a management role carries with it leadership accountability. To me, leadership is a property of a role. And so it's the role that carries the property of the accountability. And I don't get into an argument about we need more leadership or more management. I say we need more people who are capable of getting the most out of their subordinates and letting them work to their full creativity. I call that managerial leadership as well.
Yeah, I was just going to say that's a leadership too, and it's really the capability, potential of somebody to be able to win people over and establish that kind of relationship that, you know, so many organizations, you see these toxic relationships, and those organizations cannot move forward. I see it often. And the interesting thing is sometimes the CEO will not get rid of the toxic person because there may be some level of contribution or productivity, and they'll say, well, I can't get rid of them because.
Right.
And it's just really poisoning the rest of the organization and, as you say, limiting creativity and productivity of the rest of the staff.
Yes, and that's where structure comes in, because what people want the right boss with the right kinds of skills, and so they can work to their full creativity. So you have to marry the two up, and structure comes first, and then you can begin to look at some of the other issues. So I spend start off with structure, then I go into some of the traditional approaches to leadership that your listeners are probably comfortable with. But if you don't get the organization right, it makes it much more difficult to work on the other issues.
Well, Dr. Clement, let me ask you, we just have a few minutes to the program. For our listeners, what are some action steps they can take or some places they can go to get the tools or the information, books, your website? Where else can they go to get more information on organizational design? And what three or four tips would you give them to be looking at right now, you know, assessing their own organization? What are two or three tips that you think they should see if they're inherent in their own organizations?
Well, I think the first thing they have to do is make sure that they're on the differentiation of work at each successive level, and then be able to take a look at that work and make sure that it's not only different, but it adds value. So if you're at a higher level and you're in a staff role, are you doing work that's going to support the operator who's actually producing the goods or services that the company may be doing? And in smaller companies, you've got multiple hats, and so the question is, how are you helping the frontline worker do his or her job? And so the issue is, and how is your work that you're doing doing that? And if you're simply supervising and looking over and measuring what other people are doing, to me it's a suspect role. I don't say supervision isn't important. The issue is, what else are you doing
to add value,
that's unique?
So you need to be, and not only your employees need to add value as a manager or a leader, you need to be adding value to your people all the time.
Yes, and so start off by clarifying what's the work, because all too often people will focus on the personalities and not the work. And by looking at the work, then you can begin to get at the underlying skills, knowledges, job fit issues, et cetera, to come with it. But we don't spend enough time focusing on the work. Second thing I would do would be, if you have to work across boundaries, normal organizational boundaries, what authorities do you need to do that? And do all the parties, have they all agreed to the authorities? So we've defined, there's a whole bunch of terms, but we've defined seven different authority relationships across boundaries, and they vary in terms of how much strength they have in terms of those things. And people can get those by simply looking at my website or looking at one of the papers.
And again, the website is
organizational.com.
Okay.
And then I think, I believe everybody can be a more effective leader. Some will be better than others if they, in fact, carry out what I call the normal day-to-day leadership practices required in doing their job. So they assign work clearly. They allow subordinates to participate in the definition of that work. measure the outcome of that work in terms of meaningful metrics. These are not, this is not rocket science. They communicate that. They listen to the subordinates in terms of their input, and they make adjustments.
So what it is it's common sense that's pretty uncommon.
Yes, nothing I've told you is new or unique that good managers haven't been doing for a long, long time.
Yeah, and some of it comes naturally, and some of it requires a real exercise. And, you know, most companies are running as fast as they can, and so they say, well, I don't have time to sit down and evaluate those jobs, but and the people and clarify these boundaries that you're talking about. But if they don't, they would gain more time and more productivity if they did step back a bit and do that. Well, Dr. Clement, I want to thank you for being our guest, and I love your work, and maybe we'll have you on again in the future. This is such an interesting topic, so thanks for being with us. We want to thank our listeners in South Florida for being with us today, and above all else, we especially want to thank our sponsor, the Hudson Institute of Executive Education at Nova Southeastern University. Also providing all kinds of education as all of us are interested in helping companies grow and prosper, be more profitable, and be more productive. That's our mission. So thank you for being with us. Visit us at mindyourbiztoday.com and smartadvantage.com. And Dr. Clement, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
The Hudson Institute of Executive Education at Nova Southeastern University provides training in more than 30 areas of business, from communication fundamentals to advanced leadership. All courses are taught by instructors who have years of successful corporate experience. Investing in Hudson's executive education programs will provide your team with skills and tools that result in measurable returns. To customize your organization's training, visit nova.edu/business.
You've been listening to Mind Your Biz Today with Janie Smith, CEO of Smart Advantage, best-selling author and business consultant extraordinaire. Tune in next Friday at 4:30 p.m. for another great program here on 880 The Biz.